This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 177, sponsored by Shigeru Death Frenzy, by Funimation, and Discount Comic Book Service.
Can I fix it and still care? Can I run? Wishing I could run and hide.
Hello.
Hi.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast.
That's where I'm listening to.
You may have just heard that a moment ago, yeah. Actually. Episode 177.
I love those guys.
Yeah. I like their early work better. My name's Josh Flanning, and I'm here with, over there, that's...
I'm Connor Kilpatrick.
And of course, right here...
I'm Ron Richards.
Ron Richards. We're going to hear more from you in a minute, I believe.
Yes.
iFanboy.com is our website. It's a website devoted to comic books, the sweet, sweet science.
Does that mean I'm done?
Yes, actually. Yeah, done.
Right. You may go.
We just fired Connor.
Nice.
Every week, we all read a whole lot of comic books, and one of us picks the best one. We call that the pick of the week. They write a review on a Wednesday night. Of course, every Sunday we release this Pick of the Week audio podcast where we talk about that book and other books from the week and other stuff. We do letters. We do tricks. I'll do a voice every once in a while.
Is this going to be the whole
show? Yeah, it's just going to be me. If you guys can just hang back and let me finally do my thing.
Because that's what everybody wants to do.
Hey, half the people out there love it. Other half will never listen again.
Third?
Let's be generous.
Say a third.
I'll go with 60%.
60?
Yeah, 70%. And
92%.
If you haven't read your books, all of them, if you haven't read your books yet, we're going to be talking about the books from this last week, so we don't want to spoil them for you. So make sure you read them first, and then come back here and listen to this whole show so you can enjoy it more fully. Or, you know what? Throw caution to the breeze. Fuck it.
Throw caution to the breeze? To the wind?
Caution
breeze
to the
and wind.
Wind
are, in fact, synonyms.
True. Good point.
The thing is, though, if you're throwing to the breeze, you're not quite being as adventurous because the breeze is light.
Listen, it's comic books, not war.
Speaking of war, the pick of the week this week was my responsibility, and I stepped up to it, and I chose the Umbrella Academy Dallas issue number 5.
Like you accomplished. And I stepped up to the task.
I did it.
The call went out. I said, I will do this.
The Umbrella Academy is it's written by Gerard Way and art by Gabriel Ba. This is the second miniseries in this series. The first volume has been out in trade for a while, and I know I read it in issues. You read it in trade. Right. And have you read it yet?
I read the trade.
You read the trade? Okay.
I wrote a review on the site. The one you don't go to?
Collectively, I can't remember everything we write.
It was a week ago.
Collectively, what did we think of it?
Loved it. Loved the first.
Yeah. It was great.
What was it called? The Something Sweet, something like that?
Apocalypse Sweet.
Yeah, it was really, really, really good.
It's funny because this book carries such a stigma over Gerard Way.
I was waiting for the standard disclaimer.
Exactly. As I ranted in my review on iFanboy.com about that, where it's like, I don't want to start this like, well, you know, I was really skeptical about this because he's the singer for My Chemical Romance, but...
No one told me they were the most hated band in the world.
I know... And they sell a lot of records.
Yeah. You know, if you were to play, like, like band music from three popular bands right now, and one of them is My Chemical Romance. I couldn't tell you which one it is.
Right.
Like, I don't know what they sound like. And I have no...
And the funny thing is that if you played three songs from three popular bands, My Chemical Romance would probably be the one that I liked, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, they were the song at the end of Watchmen. Yeah, like...
Don't go the other way on it. No.
They're a great band. They're great. No, I never listened to
them.
I
love their early work best, but...
Well, because they're on a major, so I never listened to them.
They're also certainly way worse.
I knew I'd get that from you.
You can't see it, but I rolled my eyes in such a powerful
hardcore way.
But I just didn't realize that, like, that was such an issue.
It's such an issue. And it's really kind of startling. And I feel really bad because it might be keeping some people from reading a really good comic book.
He's coming at this as almost a fully formed comic book writer.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. And this issue really stood out for me the best because the storyline, it's a six-issue miniseries that's focusing around one of the number five of the Umbrella Academy.
Well, let's back explain what the whole premise of the book is, because, again, most people haven't read it.
There's a super team, basically, and you find out that there were all these orphans who have superpowers who were adopted by this father character. I can't remember his name. And they all have numbers, or, like, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And, like, you know, they're weird. You know, like, there's seance.
They're raised like a family, but they're not actually related.
They kind of don't like each other, and they're kind of assholes. They're all kind of
flawed.
Broken in
some
way.
Well, they grew up screwed up.
Right, because the father figure was a shitty
father figure. Awful, and so they grew up all with issues.
He was playing them against each other, sort of like the Bluths. Yeah. They really, it's like a superhero version of the Bluths.
That's a very good, from Arrested Development.
Yeah,
that's
sorry.
That's a very good analogy.
And so, the first six issues talks a lot about how they were as kids, and then what happens to them later, and their alliances, and the fractures between them, and all that stuff. Yep. And so, at the end of that, a lot of stuff is left really kind of up in the air.
Yeah.
And so, as we get into this, they have to go, and I don't even remember how this... Oh, okay. So, the one mysterious kid is like a time traveler killer, but he's also... He's a kid, and
he
never
grew up.
Yeah,
number five. Are you reading this miniseries?
I just caught up.
Oh, I had no idea. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I thought you were.
After he read the trade, he liked it and he went and found all the back issues.
Oh, awesome. Oh, yeah, you did it at the con. I remember that. I do remember that. Yes.
And what?
Also in the article.
I do remember that at the convention.
I don't read the articles either. So, I don't even write my articles.
So what's happened now is that number five is going back to 1963 to assassinate President Kennedy. That's the basic gist of this miniseries. So already off the bat, you've got you know, family-like dynamic of a team. Kind of X-Men-y in the way I interpret it. You've got, he's already bringing like a weird Mignola-esque kind of weirdness to the whole title.
I think his weirdness is very Morrison-esque.
That's a good point, yeah, which is not a surprise considering how big
of
an influence
he's also a friend of Morrison.
Yeah. I see a lot of Morrison in this, but it's tempered.
No, it's not like way out there,
it's
Morrison.
Right.
But
it's a very nice rendition of sort of a Morrison style comic book that I feel is a little easier to grasp, I suppose.
Yep. And so this issue focuses on is right after the fact that they're back in 1963, and three of the brothers or teammates or whatever, Seance, Kraken, and the Kraken, and the monkey guy,
Space Boy.
They went back in time to stop Number Five from assassinating Kennedy, but they overshot it when they back in time, and they've been in Vietnam for the past 2 years. Which I thought was like, I love time travel. So you put time travel in a story, and I'm there. Like Quantum Leap, all
those
kind of
things.
It's very heavy. The fact that they
what is this strange fascination with the weight?
The fact that they go back in time and they end up in Vietnam. They end up 2 years early from where they need to be, and totally across the world where they need to be is just kind of funny.
Yeah.
And
time travel is not an exact science.
It's not at all. Then you throw in the fact that there's rampant talking monkeys throughout this entire series.
Which is never explained.
Never explained. They don't have to.
There's just chimps who are super intelligent, and it's a fact of life.
And then what happens is that they've kind of settled into an army. Who is it? Kraken's kind of settled into an army role in Vietnam, leading an American squad as they are recovering the body of a mummy that used to rule in Vietnam, who's going to bring peace to the region. Never explained that either. This all happened in between the issues, which I love.
That's what's great about it. I mean, I'm not reading this series, but in general, the whole feel of it is you have to just take a lot of things on face value.
And then they run into some Viet Cong. But oh wait, it's not just normal Viet Cong; it's Viet Cong vampires, which is
VCVs,
which is just like. So what I love about what Gerard Way's done with creating this universe is that he's created a world that is somewhat realistic. It's somewhat grounded in reality, but every now and then there's just a slight tilt to the left,
and that is just accepted as a given.
Yeah, exactly. And plays it off to the point where it's totally believable and totally, like, you buy into this whole universe. And that's what I thought was just really, what's really unique about it.
Well, the word I'd use to describe this book is fun.
Yes,
I mean, it's
yeah.
lots of fun.
It's yeah. imaginative.
And it's imaginative, like crazy.
But the thing, that, the other half of that, though, is that right now, there's this thing in comic books that happens where somebody will go, vampires who are Viet Cong, sign me up.
Right.
And I hate that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's so reductive, and it's like, that does not make a good story. So on the other side of it is that there are really interesting characters. These characters are all very interesting.
Yep.
And I think that's what works. And one of the other things you were talking about on this was they don't explain stuff a little bit.
Yep.
He doesn't I mean, I guess that he doesn't explain everything. He makes the reader work for it a little bit, but not in an unpleasant way.
But it's almost in that, like, he doesn't need to explain it.
No, I know. He just goes, yeah. this is this bit of information. Take it. We're moving on to the next thing. And it's nice.
It's counter to the idea that you have to explain every little thing that happens in every panel.
Yep. Exactly.
Exactly.
But it's done elegantly so that I don't feel like I'm missing anything.
You should talk about the art.
The art, Gabriel Ba's art is just, I mean, Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon, the twin brothers from Brazil, have been kind of, they won a bunch of awards last year, and they're really starting to get, you know, noticed after their work in Casanova, and Fabio Moon did Smoking Guns, yep. and they're doing a lot of indie stuff. This is probably Gabriel Ba's biggest, kind of, the biggest book that he's doing right now.
It's probably the biggest hit.
And it is, and his art is just so, I don't know what it is about it, because it's like kind of cartoony. But it's not like the way he handles action is just very elegant.
It's got a really good storytelling sense, and the yep. pages are very, very fluid.
Yes.
And while it's crazy, his anatomy is still there, and his yep. storytelling fundamentals are there, but he's also having a lot of fun with it. The panels, you know, are dynamic and fun and dramatic, and it's good, but it doesn't look like anything else.
Yeah. It's totally unique in what it does. In the way he depicts the story, and even with characters, I mean, like they're, you know, like each character, like he's
so
got this,
different.
Yeah, he's got this art style where if you look at it really quickly, it might look like everything looks the same, but then if you look at every individual character, you notice that they're all so unique and so different, and it's almost deceiving in a way. Like it's disarming, you know. I don't know. I'm just loving the series. This Dallas miniseries. I can't wait for you to read this one because it's totally.
I'm surprised. Do the other covers say Dallas on them?
I don't think so.
Doesn't say Dallas on this cover.
No,
it just says Umbrella Academy 5.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of confusing. They should either put the subtitle or put a different volume number. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to when this comes out.
Yeah.
I loved the first trade.
Yeah. So Umbrella Academy issue number 5, Dark Horse Comics. If you haven't tried the Umbrella Academy, if you've got a problem with My Chemical Romance thing, just drop it, pick up the first trade. This is going to be wrapped up with 6 issues soon, and you know that they're going to scramble to have the trade out probably by San Diego.
They're quick about that, Dark Horse.
Yeah, so I would definitely look for this trade probably like June or July. And it's this one, I mean, time travel, Kennedy assassination, vampire Viet Cong, talking monkeys, you know.
But don't do that. Don't go, no, see, right. What else do you need to know?
Right.
There's a great story with great characters going on.
But and also, that what really, else do you need to know?
Exactly,
honestly.
Though.
No.
Vampire Viet Cong.
No, I refuse.
Undead
it works.
Charlie.
Ugh. That's
it works.
Awesome. VCV.
I had that once. I had a shot clear right up.
The other book that was very close to being pick of the week was Amazing Spider-Man number 589 for two reasons for me personally. Fred Van Lente's first, this is his first Spider-Man issue?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It was really good.
It was really good.
Yes.
His script and everything was just amazing.
It's funny because they just announced in the last issue that
Spider-Man.
It's amazing. That there's new writers coming in. So I got a little nervous that there would be a drop off in quality. You know, you didn't know what to expect, but he really nailed this all the way around in the first issue. Lots of really funny stuff, lots of imaginative stuff. He's fighting the Spot, who controls these little interdimensional portals. He'd punch the Spot. His hand would come out of another part of the Spot's body.
Spot's a character that I almost want to make fun of, like typeface, but it's actually he depicted him in a really cool kind of manner and did a lot of really cool stuff with it.
Those Russian mobsters and they're mixed up with the Spot, and it was just really fun. Good stuff.
The other interesting thing about this was that we've been talking about, or at least I've been talking about, how Amazing Spider-Man recently over the past years is like the way Spider-Man should be, the way it used to be, and the art by Paolo Sequeira. Mm-hmm. Was like McFarlane.
Yeah, it was.
Like it was almost scarily like McFarlane.
You're talking about the Batman scene?
No, I mean pretty much every panel that Spider-Man's in, I didn't really like his people.
Yeah.
His people didn't look like McFarlane-y, but him as Spider-Man looked not only like McFarlane, but looked awesome. It reminded me of why we liked McFarlane so much in the late 80s when he was doing Spider-Man. That one panel when the Batman, in the webs.
Yeah, he looks like Spider-Man. It's very McFarlane.
Yeah. But I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, not
I don't
want
to come off the wrong way. You know,
McFarlane isn't an insult.
No,
especially when you're talking about Spider-Man.
Yeah. And the when he punched Spot in the face and his hand came out of another spot and punched him, that was just great. That was a very good panel.
It was good. I mean, this is a one shot. So if most of these have been arcs.
Yep.
So if you're looking to check out a Spider-Man book, get an entire story, 589 Return of the Spot is a one shot deal.
If you're curious about Spider-Man, you don't know if you want to try the new, you know, brand new day world, stuff like that. It's just Amazing Spider-Man now, and it's just the way Spider-Man should be. And this is a good issue to grab.
Yeah.
So, Justice League of America number 31. I bought this on accident. I think in the corner of my eye, I just thought it was Justice Society, and I was like, oh, I'll just pick this up.
Yeah.
And I remember that Connor had been talking about how Dwayne McDuffie has been hamstrung by being forced to do things.
Well,
and I want to know.
Disclaimer, I had dropped this a couple months ago. I picked this up again because of the Final Crisis.
Okay. Now, who are these characters? Because this was a shoehorning.
Well, not only that, but it was a shoehorning to deal with what's happening to the Justice League with this other Justice League team that Hal Jordan's organizing that doesn't come out till July.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was shoehorning to explain something that is how many April, May, June, 4 months away.
If it comes out.
Yeah.
4 months.
See, I didn't have a problem with the story of the characters. I thought it was pretty spot on that in that sense. I liked the idea that Final Crisis is fucked the team up.
Yeah.
That's a really good story.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was bad. The fact that it's the ramifications are coming out of a thing that hasn't happened yet.
Yep.
And I didn't really like the art. And the first page, the dialogue balloons are wrong.
Yeah. And I know that there's all sorts of things you can do, but I don't want to see the chairperson of they took all the piss right out of Mockingbird.
Black Canary.
Well,
that's been the issue in the whole series is she's got no respect.
That's horrible. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess it's not something I want to read. I guess because that's not how she's written. I only know her from Black Arrow.
Green Arrow,
Black Canary, and that's not how she is. So to me, this was such a drastic departure. And then the bits were like. Superman or Wonder Woman won't help her. I was like, what is this?
Now, the only good thing about this was
Superman's going to do Krypton. Of course he can't help her.
I know, but they're basically like, I don't know, what are you going to do?
The only good thing about this that I took away from it was Hal Jordan justifying why he's forming the other team in 4 months.
Yeah.
his basic reason is because the Justice League has been ineffectual.
Well,
since we got back together, what have we done? And it was all this insular, we helped Red Tornado, then we helped What's Her Face.
It's almost a meta-commentary on the book.
Yes, but exactly.
Also at the same time, then why am I reading this?
Right, exactly.
That's a good point. I'm not going to continue on reading this. Yeah. I bought this solely to see what was going to happen.
I can't believe how much of a train wreck this book has become. This should be the flagship DC
and
superhero book.
It looks like a Top Cow book from 1997.
Yeah.
Is what it looks like.
I hate
like.
That he draws Superman's symbol on Superman's belt.
Yeah.
No one does that.
Yeah. This book, I thought it needs to be blown up and restarted at number one again.
Yep.
It needs,
31 issues of crap.
It hasn't been 31 issues.
No, one of them was great.
Yeah, right. The one
11 was amazing.
Yeah. But honestly, Meltzer started this on a path of a very self-indulgent approach.
I didn't like that either.
Yeah, and they stuck with it. It
needs to be killed and restarted because the taste is bad. I mean, the first page, Zatanna's calling Wonder Woman Dinah,
yeah.
Which is Black Canary's name.
Right. I mean, that's just wrong.
That's page one.
Yeah. That's really bad. Dinah.
Oh, wow. I didn't
Diana. Yeah.
Actually, I was watching the lettering, and this was sort of crappy.
Yeah.
Oh, besides God. That. Anyway.
I didn't hate it, but I have no desire to continue. It's so stupid that they put a book out that references or is dependent on a book that hasn't come out yet.
Right.
Which, by the way, that series has been knocked down to a mini.
Man. Remember that was the big announcement last year?
It's been knocked down to a mini now.
Was that WonderCon last year? It's been more than a year now.
Yeah, that was
more than
February
year.
Of last year. Yeah. Now, the other side of this being the Marvel sort of big team book, New Avengers, which I guess they've split it up a little bit.
It's really still the New Avengers of the JLA.
This is the Avengers.
Yes, this is the main book. Yeah,
I loved this.
Every month... For 24 pages, for $3, I will read an entire book of just them having meetings.
Yes.
Yep.
Agreed.
Just having meetings.
Which is funny because that's what one of the things that was complained about in the Justice League was them having meetings. But because they were all holier than thou in those meetings.
This is fantastic. The meeting scene was great. My only problem with this, so this issue was broken up into two kind of tracks. You've got the art by Billy Tan, which is focusing on the team and Hawkeye and the ramifications of Hawkeye going on TV and calling out Norman Osborn and that sort of thing. And at the end of the story, they have a team meeting to get their crap together and decide who the leader is and stuff like that. Then you've got a second story arc, which is with Chris Pacello art, about Doctor Strange looking for the new Sorcerer Supreme.
Looked real good.
Well, no, I was gonna say,
yes.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the one problem with the Chris Pacello art is, my God, the mustache in Doctor Strange.
Nah, whatever. That's awesome.
No, it is awesome.
No, that's awesome. That's totally awesome. I have no problem with that. Can I tell you about my favorite thing in this was?
What?
Spoiler time, by the way. Just an extra one if you want it. I really thought Spider-Man was going to walk.
So did I. Yeah.
They surprised the shit out of me.
So they're having their team meeting, and basically Clint Barton lays down the smackdown on Spider-Man and says, listen, we don't know who you are. Tell us who you are, you're off the team.
Yeah.
And I really thought he was going to leave. And because now nobody knows, they used to know his identity, but with Brand New Day, they don't. He handled the page turn really well.
Yes.
Yep.
You know, like, it reveals as the end of the right-hand page, you turn the left, and he takes his mask off, and he tells them.
I like how he brought in the ultimate idea of having Peter and Jessica be high school classmates. Right. I like that. It adds to her backstory.
And the coma girl
great. The other thing is, and we've complained about, it's Billy Tan, right?
Billy Tan.
His storytelling's not bad.
No, but just, I don't like the way he draws
people. And that's fine. I don't like the style of the way that the kids look, but his storytelling's good.
Yeah,
I know what's happening. There's a lot. It's not easy to draw a bunch of people talking at all. And that was done well. And then finally, at the end, what's up? Clint Barton.
Yeah. Oh, he's the team leader?
Yep.
Yeah, you knew that was coming.
I had two laugh-out-loud moments in this. One was, he totally nailed the, oh my God, it's my high school crush.
Yes.
Moment where she tells him to shush.
Yep.
Where she tells her husband to be quiet. And she's totally just like flustered because her high school crush is here. She's like, shh.
Yeah.
That made me laugh. And then Wolverine going, good meeting.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Good meeting. Yeah.
It's so funny because Bendis,
that made me laugh out loud.
We used to complain about Bendis writing Wolverine.
Yeah. And now,
like,
he nails it. Yeah.
He's got it now. Like, it took him a little while. Meeting.
Yeah.
This was totally, meetings. Every month a new Avengers.
Yeah, no, I think they should. Meeting. They really should.
I would totally read that.
The bureaucracy of the Avengers.
Every month.
That's totally fun.
Backup story.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, it was really great. They're all them around the table. And so I guess Bucky's full time on the team, huh?
Yeah, but even they recognize that.
Okay. Oh, that's the one thing. It's not the freaking Bronx. Why do they keep saying the Bronx? The Avengers headquarters, the Bronx.
So it's in Brooklyn.
It's in Brooklyn, and Bendis has said it's supposed to be Brooklyn. It's not the Bronx. But every time the issue comes out, it says Bronx.
So whose fault is that?
I don't know.
Probably an editorial problem.
It's probably an editorial. You see, Avengers hideout, the Bronx. See, it's Brooklyn.
That.
It's Steve's apartment in Brooklyn.
That's very different.
Yeah, pisses me off. Huh. Anyway.
All right. Well, but still. Great issue.
Yep.
Very good. I also really liked Proof 18. I think this is my favorite issue in a long time.
I think I've been waiting for this part.
Yeah. They've sort of been exploring other things, and they've been fine. They've been enjoyable. They've been good.
It's like, now we know what the universe is, and now they're going to go back and expand on
it. It's almost Hellboyish in that Proof, the character Proof, has been around for hundreds of years. There's a missing portion of his life, and now we're going to explore some of that missing portion of his life.
Yep.
And I really like, he's been in Victorian era. He's in London, right?
Mm-hmm. I feel like this issue of this arc is the one that's proving that this book's not going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Riley, this was one of his best issues ever.
Yep.
The way that he drew, it's almost cleaned up a little from what he normally does, which is fine. I like how he does things normally, but the past stuff is like a slightly different style. It's a little cleaner, and I think that the way that he drew, what's her name? What's the woman? I can't remember.
The singing woman?
Yeah. The monkey lady.
The singing monkey lady. That's right.
I love the way that he drew her.
Yes.
Because she kind of looks like a beautiful woman, but she's also a beast, and she's kind of like, she's sort of sad.
Sad eyes, yep, totally.
She's human, but not. And it's just really, really well done. I really dug that a lot. I do have a question.
Julia.
Yeah, Julia. What's the deal at the end? That's the name of the story, isn't it? The story's called
What's
Julia.
The name of the end?
Yeah, Julia Part 1. That's the name. No, the very last page, though.
Yeah, that was a little bit.
Now, is she the killer? Or is the killer in her trailer?
It's hard to tell because the killer's in the background. It looks like there's a window, and she's coming through the window. That's what it looks like.
Okay, yeah. Well, I can't tell, but either way.
It looks like Spring Hill Jack's about to kill Julia.
Yeah, well, we'll figure it out next month.
But this is the perfect setting for it.
Uh-huh.
The Victorian setting is perfect for the story. I like the fact that the cryptoid box has changed to the old, to the different kind of lettering, different kind of titling.
Yep.
And just really, really strong at all ends.
Yeah, great issue. Really, you're absolutely right. Dead on, sir.
Excellent. This is a big week. It was really big.
Was.
Before we get to the rest of the books, I want to remind everybody that the crowd howls for blood as two damaged warriors sacrifice flesh and bone in a perverse test of wills. It's Shiguri Death Frenzy. Fujiki Jinosuke and Irako Saigen, two legendary samurai, share a long and violent past, bitter rivals from the moment they locked eyes. These warriors inflict wounds on each other that would have destroyed lesser men. As the final chapter of their saga unfolds, they must summon the strength for one last battle, a battle only one shall survive. And you can get this on Blu-ray and on DVD on March 31st, Shigeru Death Frenzy from Funimation, The Beauty is in the Kill. So if you head over to funimation.com/Shiguri, which is S-H-I-G-U-R-U-I, for more details.
I'm going to need a more dramatic reading next time from that, Ron.
Yeah. Connor kind of upped the bar and you brought us back down.
The Legendary Samurai. It's hard to match that.
Yeah.
So check out funimation.com Shiguri for more details about Shiguri Death Frenzy.
Nova, number 23, up next. I have one word to say about this, and it's yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
When I saw the cover, I went, oh, this is going to be good.
Oh, yeah.
You see, now this is a cover explaining what happens in the book.
Uh-huh. It's a good cover, too.
Yeah.
Cover on the outside was better than that.
Let me see.
Basically, that was really... They brought it into what's happening in Dark Avengers. Hammer is now taking over the labs where they were dealing with Richard's issues before. We found out last time that Richard's going to die. Or it apparently seems so. So the scientist who was working on him, like, runs away with him, and they take him to what is an AIM lab, and he throws up the Boy Scout. He's like, I don't care. She's like, just let me help. And he's like, I can't have any part of this.
Yeah.
And there's a really, it's kind of romantic, and it's kind of complicated. It's a little melodramatic.
I thought these kind of relationships should happen more in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Where you work with somebody, and then like, oh shit, she works for AIM. And it's like, and he's like, I can't be part of this.
AIM is really taken off in Marvel right now.
Yeah.
Like, Hydra's fuck them. Yeah. You know, like, AIM is seeming to be, like,
well,
everywhere.
AIM is the better design.
Yeah.
AIM, that's really all it is.
But AIM are, like,
I love
not
how,
quite
I,
bad
I
guys.
Love how they're in a high-tech lab, and there's, like, the Beehive costume just laying on the side, and that's what tipped it off. He's like, wait a minute, is this AIM?
I'm very glad that I read this after I read Guardians of the Galaxy, though.
I read this before Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm fine with that. I mean,
are they intertwined?
These two pull each other. So basically, what happens is that he gets meets up with Quasar, who in we're gonna get the Guardians of the Galaxy number 12 next, but who gets the quantum bands back, and he gives them to Rich, and so now Rich is the new Quasar.
At least, but the thing is, they've done lots of this stuff.
Right.
I think Rich has been killed twice in this already.
Yeah,
there's been a lot of Novas and Nova Primes, and then the stuff going on like in the Ego.
Yep.
Is interesting because it's really creepy.
Yeah, like, basically now the Nova Corps the World Mind is now aware of the war that's going on between the Kree and the Shi'ar with Black Bolt and the Inhumans and stuff like that. So they're basically on red alert and they're on their way to take off to go for it.
So is this all tied into War of Kings?
Yeah, now it's pulled into War of Kings. And by the way, I'm loving War of Kings, like the whole, like everything.
When they take off, like the fact that the Ego, the living planet, was right next to the Earth, has screwed up the weather on Earth real bad. So, like, the background of all of this stuff happening is this huge storms and lightning
War
and stuff.
Yeah, loving War of Kings Darkhawk, though.
It wasn't that bad, actually, because Abnett Landon co-wrote it with Cebulski.
I thought you gave it, like, a 1 or 2 on iFanboy.
I might have.
First one.
Yeah.
Okay, Guardians of the Galaxy 12.
Better, though. Yep.
This artist can stay on for a long time.
Agreed.
This artist, what's his name?
It is Wes Craig.
Eves Chang.
Wes Craig.
Oh, I can't read it. I'm over here in the dark. I saw
Craig.
An IBS. Whatever.
Wes Craig.
Wes Craig. There were some pages in this.
Yeah, that were badass.
Blew me away.
Yep.
There were others where there was actually some storytelling problems. Like, he does really nice big pages. Like, the sort of pin-up kind of things. But the general style, the figure drawing, all that stuff, really nice. This, when he does pages where there's a really huge, there's this big, really big dragon in there. And, like, the scale between the figures was a ton of fun. Other than that, this was, like, really, really fun issue.
It was, but I kind of want to get back to the team.
Oh, I don't care.
Yeah.
I was totally digging this. I had a lot of fun with this one.
Yeah.
Totally fun. But, yeah, it was a focus on one. And this is the other half of the Quasar story.
Cool.
Great art.
Really good.
Next up, I just wanted to mention real quick, basically for Paul, our staff writer, Paul Montgomery, I finally picked up Conan the Sumerian, number 9.
Is it worth the hype?
This is second in an arc, but I didn't really notice the difference. It's like young Conan, and he's with like an army, and they're ransacking, and it's fun. It's really good looking.
It's from Dark Horse, right?
Yeah, it's from Dark Horse. It's a lot of fun, and I'm not reading any books like this. It's
so
a barbarian.
Are you on this now?
Yeah, I'll probably keep buying it for a while. It was a good time.
Who's the team behind it?
I don't know these names. So it's Tim Truman and Tomas Goriello, with color by Jose Villaruba. Great stuff. I really dug it. It was fun. You should check it out. Really nice pages in this. Just really, really nice art and layouts.
Awesome.
That's up. What's up next?
Superman number 696.
686.
I brought this up solely because it was a fine issue, whatever, it's just like it had been before. I was so distracted reading this. If you look at the lettering, if you have this issue, take it out and take a look at it. Connor, why don't you pick a couple of random word balloons and favor us with a reading? Because I just want this to be...
All right. So I'm told, I confess, I never seen the sewers of any other city, so I wouldn't know, but yes, Metropolis is quite the eighth wonder, and I've seen some of the other cities.
Every other word in this is bolded, and it completely takes away the point of bolding letters and something. I don't know who... This is like an old Jack Kirby comic. It's horrid.
I confess I didn't even notice. I don't notice that.
Right.
Didn't
no, if it. I hadn't noticed, though, I wouldn't have a thing to say about this issue. It was fine.
No, it was a fine issue.
But that was really rough. And once I did notice it, I was like, wait a minute, this is all over the whole
thing.
That's
the kind of thing that once you notice, you can't not notice.
Oh, my God, it was
horrid. So I thank you now for ruining my Superman experience.
I'm sorry.
Ruined.
But you got to read it once before I pointed it out.
Yeah, no.
There you go. That's all I had to say about that.
All right, and you guys are still liking the Dear Billy series?
Yes. I'm wondering if the next series is going to end on a really down note like the first two have.
I think if the first two have...
The next one is Tankies, and it looks like
it's... It looks kind of goofy tank guys.
Yeah, Gary Erskine, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks a little more upbeat. Who knows? I think I saw where this one was going by the time we got to the end of it.
I did, yes, but into the second issue, I thought this was going to go a different way.
Yeah, I like where it went. I was happy.
No, I did, but into the second issue, I thought it implied she was going to get in a plane and crash it into a Japanese, you know, something.
Turns out this Dynamite book had a John Cassaday cover. Who knew? Surprise, my favorite surprise. Page in this was probably... basically, the nurse has been killing Japanese prisoners every once in a while, and one of them is a real dick to her, so she kills him sort of outright without thinking about it or planning around it. And they kind of figure it out. And there's a page about her getting fired, basically, and it just says, you know, the caption at the top part of her letter is, "What followed was extremely British." And it's just the doctor skirting around what they're actually saying, like, well, you know, it's kind of all, they've got this idea, and anyway, and at the end she just goes, you know what, I've been thinking about leaving. And it's just all this passive-aggressive not saying what you want.
And Josh and I work for a British company, so oh. We kind of have experience in this kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Man, it was good. I just liked the character at the end, couldn't get past it.
It was very true to life.
Yeah.
You know what's the best thing about Dynamite books is that it's almost like reading a John Cassaday comic because every third or fourth page is an ad for another book.
With a cover of him.
So it's like Buck Rogers, Sherlock Holmes, Dracula, and they're all John Cassaday pages, so it's almost like you're getting a full John Cassaday comic.
Well, this cover here has a Jay Lee cover, actually, so I guess I'm off. Although, looks a lot like
and
a John
Hero
Cassaday
Gasm
cover.
And Herogasm is Derek Robertson, but it's almost like having him back.
Yeah.
He's never doing any more comics.
Nope.
I totally didn't see Daredevil and Kingpin getting together as a couple in Daredevil 117 as the
Will
cover
you marry
as
me?
The cover depicts them holding
that was,
hands.
That was, that was the Kingpin voice in my head from the Spider-Man animated series. Yeah.
So Daredevil 117 is the second part of the Return of the King storyline, and with the recent news that Brubaker's leaving Daredevil and Diggle's coming on, I hope Michael Lark never leaves the book because it's
the art in this was spectacular.
It's
the
so
production
good.
Was great.
Did
you, a lot of it was in the snow.
Did you get to the snowy page?
Yes.
I flip the page and I'm sitting next to my wife and I just go, "Oh my God, look at that!"
Yeah.
And she didn't care.
Yeah.
But I was like, "But look at it."
Oh God, it looks so good. And so basically Kingpin's back in New York and he's asserted himself amongst the underbelly, the crime underworld.
The snowy ninja fight was just beautiful.
Ninja fights are awesome to begin with, but snowy ninja fight was just great.
I love the dynamic between Matt and Kingpin, and that's a great dynamic, and having him back shows you how important it is to have those adversaries.
And just the very Battlestar-esque end. Like, you know, that basically Kingpin's going on a suicide mission.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's not planning to survive this. And the idea of them teaming up, you know, like, and it, I don't know. I just feel like Brubaker really nailed the approach that Kingpin would take and the Daredevil's response to that and the interplay between the two. Just really well done.
Excellent. Excellent issue.
So good. Cool. So a bunch of other comics came out. I read like 10 other ones this week, and you can see them all at ifanboy.com/comics. But then also there, you can do your own pull list, and you can rate and review your comics after you read them. And I want to highlight a couple of reviews from our users over at ifanboy.com. And we're doing things a little different this week. We're reading the entire review because I feel as if these are a little shorter, but they also were well written and good ones.
We got meat.
So our first one comes from Cyberon. Who reviewed X-Force Cable Messiah War Prologue, and he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And this was, of the iFanboy community, 23.9% made it the pick of the week.
This was the most pick of the week's book, which was a bit of a shocker.
Runaway hit this week. And so what he has to say about it, he says, "Within the last year, we've had Secret Invasion, Final Crisis, Batman RIP, New Krypton, Ran-Thanagar War, Reign in Hell, Battle for the Cal, War of Kings, etc., etc. So many events that I started to question whether I would buy any new events. That was before I read the prologue to Messiah War. Any writer who wants to write an event or even a miniseries should read this issue. It's perfectly told the reader where the story is going, where it's been. It's perfectly accessible to a new reader and not a waste of money for fans of the Cable or X-Force series. Also, the art in the book is fantastic and gorgeous. Everything from the designs, coloring, and inking totally fits the book. Messiah War is the event that killed my event fatigue. I'm really looking forward to this event, and on a plus side, Deadpool is still in this. It's worth the money.
You know, the thing about... And event fatigue is real, despite what the companies think. It is a real thing, but... It shows you the power of a good event can totally re-energize you, because when an event works, nothing better than it.
Well, it was funny because I when I was reading this book, I realized that there are a lot of mini events going on at Marvel right now. There are
and a lot DC, of DC, everyone's just full of
Events. Yeah, I mean, but I just noticed it within Marvel. I mean, we got Dark Reign going on, we've got War of Kings going on, we've got this we got this Messiah War going on. You've got, you know, so it's like a lot of little kind of contained things. And it was funny because I don't read Deadpool, right. And after I read this issue, and I'm like, I kind of want to go read Deadpool now. Which is crazy. Ooh. Yeah, I know. So,
stand your way.
Josh is shocked.
Stand your way.
I didn't say I was going to. but I gotta agree with. I don't know if this is a 5-star book, but it was quite good. It was really good.
People seem to like it. 23% of the people did.
Yeah,
so. I didn't know there was that many X-Men fans going on. Maybe there's that many Deadpool fans.
No, don't get the Deadpool fans.
So where's Messiah War crossing into?
Well, basically what's happened now is that in the pages of X-Force, Wolverine and the X-Force crew got slapped with little time travel bracelets that Beast made, and they locked in on where Cable and the baby was in the future, and they ported themselves forward in the future. So now Cable and the baby, who is now about, like, she's about 6-7 years old, are teamed up with Wolverine and Thunderbird and X-23.
Is this part of a series? What number is that? Is it an X-Force?
It's part of X-Force.
This is a series, one-shot.
Yeah, it's a one-shot, but it's bringing together, this is going to be a crossover between the Cable book and the X-Force book.
Is Deadpool going to be crossed into it, too?
Yeah, it looks
so
like
so you're going to pick up those issues?
I don't know. I'm going to look at it. We'll see.
So will Logan fall in love with the kid?
That'd be weird.
It's Jean, right?
Yeah. I don't know. We don't know if it's Jean. She's got green eyes and red hair. So
why do they always got to go back to Archangel? Why can't they just leave Angel alone?
Yeah, don't get me started on that one. So
stupid.
So X-Force Cable Messiah War. It was actually pretty decent. All right, our next review comes from Akamu, who reviewed The Muppet Show #1 from Boom Studios.
It's time to start the movie.
And this book I was very excited for, and I didn't buy it, but I read my friend's copy, and I'm going to go back and pick it up. 0.76% of the fanboy community made their pick of the week, and Akamu gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 1 out of 5.
Ooh.
And,
sharp decline.
And says, I really wish I liked the art in this book. The script of this comic was perfect Muppetism. The pacing, the puns, the plotline buried behind the scenes freneticism. The writing was like your favorite Muppet Show episode. Not one of the ones that were brought down by Mrs. Brady trying to prove she was a real actress, or the one with the dancer who you wouldn't have recognized even if you were a cultured adult in 1979.
Lawrence Henderson?
And not a drooling toddler like I was. I still drool a lot, but hardly ever toddle. This was the cast of the Star Wars episode, or the one with the stand-up comedian whose name I never learned because I only ever seen him in the Muppet Show season 1 DVDs that I watch religiously. I know the comic is aimed for children, and so they feel they can skimp on art. But damn, this is such a fun comic to read. I wanted the characters to look like the characters from the show and not weirdly alien-like cartoons as they are in the book.
It's an indictment.
Akamu, this was written and drawn by Roger Langridge.
Langridge.
I don't think there's a D in there.
This was like the book that he was born to do.
Yeah.
And they're done in his style, so they don't look exactly like the Muppets, but I don't think you want them to look exactly like the Muppets.
Well, he does.
Right. But I mean, in general, rhetorically.
He specifically said he wants them to look like the Muppets.
Akamu's totally right in that the way there's a bunch of little vignettes that happen through the issue, but then there's an underlying plot just like the original Muppet Show. Like, if you're a fan of the Muppets, and I know you are, and
I am.
Lindsay is too. Isn't Lindsay?
Yeah. You've got Muppet things all over your house.
Not me. Okay, well, you should get this for her.
Because wait, you're telling me you don't like Jon Bon Jovi?
I don't think she wanted that either.
Because there's a toy on, and you're
I bought my wife a Jon Bon Jovi action figure.
Yeah,
she unironically likes Bon Jovi.
Right.
Well, she's from the area.
She's from Jersey.
Everyone unironically likes Bon Jovi.
She's from Connecticut.
Yeah, same thing. I really like this issue. Was fantastic, and I could see his argument about the art, but you've got it. You don't want it to be.
Right. Language is a relatively respected indie artist.
Yeah.
So.
Is it a mini?
I don't know if it's an ongoing or a mini or not. I'm not sure.
Waka waka waka.
So head over to ifanboy.com/comics where you can rate and review all your books and tell everybody what you think. And
the Swedish Chef wrote our next user review. Morgan Hinton Bergen. Bork, bork, bork.
Let's talk about Discount Comic Book Service.
Bork,
Connor, why don't you tell us about DCBS?
I'm all the way over here. Josh can do it.
right. will. DCBS is the place where you can go if you want to get your comics books delivered to you, your weekly books, if you want a discount and you don't want to go to a local shop, you don't have one near you, it's a really great place to do that. There is a discount of some percentage, Ron, do you know what that is?
A lot. Double digits.
You will save a ton of money than if you just go pick up your books this way, and they can deliver them to you whenever you want. You can like let them build up over a couple of weeks.
Is it 35%?
I think it's 35%. And each week, they've got all the new books from all the publishers and things like that.
3,500 shipping paperbacks in stock?
Yes. You can track all of your shipping. You can do all of that stuff.
Anything you get in previews?
You can get in previews is just... It's a really good solution to people who live somewhere where they don't have a great comic
shop. Also,
if
the price of comics has got you down?
Yeah.
If the increase in comics prices got you down?
You basically can go back to 1995.
Lots of people go this route, and they love it. They won't look back. They don't get them weekly, but they get their books and they get them cheap.
Well, I'll tell you this. If I didn't have to do this show, there's no way that I wouldn't be doing this.
Bold.
It's true. It's absolutely true. It's a good deal. It's, you know, it's timely. You know they're going to come to you in good condition. They ship everything nice. You can, you know...
Neatly and nicely?
Yeah. Yeah, real nice. You know, Excellent. They ship it real nice. So that's dcbservice.com. Go and check them out. They're supporting of the show, but they also run a damn fine business.
Yes, they do. All right, on to the email. Our first email comes from Pat, who goes by Patio on the site, on iFanboy.com. Says, hey guys, I was just over at Marvel's site, over at Marvel.com, and took a look at their top 70 Marvel comics of all time. There's a lot of good ones on there, no question, but there are a couple things that bother me about the list. First, there were a lot of newer comics on the list, especially ones from just the past few years. I think this is a great time for comics, but come on, isn't it a little over-representing the current era? Second, there wasn't one Daredevil comic on the list. Now, Matt's had some hard luck, but this is just unfair. There have been plenty of great Daredevil comics over the years, from Frank Miller's original run, to his stint with Dave Mazzucchelli, to the more recent Kevin Smith and Joe Quesada run, followed by the excellent teams of Bendis and Maleev and Brubaker and Lark. How could they overlook The Man Without Fear? You guys are great. Thanks.
I'm assuming this is single issues, but that's single issues.
I didn't see the list, but that's my guess.
Two things. One, lists always skew towards modern age, no matter what list, no matter who puts the list out.
Right.
Top 100 movies.
Well, there's always somebody who's going to disagree with the list.
Well, that's number one. That's overall. You're not going to the list exists to get you talking and arguing.
Yep.
But lists,
you need to buy Marvel books. It's on Marvel.com.
Well, that was the second point I was going to make, which is
but lists always skew more recent because that's when people have seen the things. I mean, that's what the
appreciation
is.
It's stuff that's fresh on your mind.
But the thing is, Marvel, if they're doing a list of their top stories, they're going to do the ones that you can buy.
Yeah.
So they're not going to talk about some vague Daredevil Frank Miller issue from the 80s. Yeah, you could. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, but the thing is, he mentioned all those Daredevil stories. They're all readily available.
Yeah,
yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
You know, maybe they weren't that good.
That could be an oversight.
You know what's funny is that if it's based on stories, there's not like a bit of that stands out as being a great story. Those are like good runs.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like how long was Bendis's run? It's long.
It was deceivingly short. When you find out how many issues it was, you're like, really?
Well, it was.
Hang on, I'm going to look that up.
Well, Frank Miller has memorable Daredevil stories. The Electra Bullseye story would be one that people would consider. I don't know.
I'm making excuses. That's all I'm doing. I want to side with the corporation.
Uninformed excuses.
Yep, that's what I do.
You're a corporate shill.
Are you a stockholder?
I am not.
All right.
I'm not a stockholder.
Are you a trader?
But I wish that I had bought stock when it was like a penny.
Do you remember going to the convention when the stock had plummeted before the movies and it was like a dollar a share? The guy got mad during the Couple Joe panel about how low
That guy kept on showing up, and every year he's like, I'm a Marvel stockholder. Yeah. Like, it was the year they didn't have a booth, and he was pissed that they didn't have a booth.
Should have bought stock then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been...
I think it's like 10 times what it was back then. Probably not right now.
Well, if I'd invested $100, then I'd have 1,000 now, but then I'd have 500 because it would have all gone away.
But somehow you would also owe
me. So how many issues do you think Bendis' run on Daredevil was?
75.
No. I guess he came on in the 30s or 40s, and he left in the 80s, so 45 issues.
It is about 65.
Okay.
I thought it was longer.
65 is over 5 years.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a 5-year run. It's
a
long
five
run.
And a half years.
Yeah, there's a couple of gaps in there, but it was about 60 or so. Yeah, it fits in an omnibus. So
it's quite long, actually, I would say. And that's the whole run in one omnibus?
Yes.
They fit 65 issues in one omnibus.
Yeah. Look at that. Look at that Spider-Man omnibus.
The Spider-Man one's only got 25 issues in it, though.
Really?
No. That thing is 50? 4 inches.
I know.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
I mean, like, if you think about it, the Captain America one is 25 issues, and that's like half the size of the Spider-Man
one. Okay, you're right. That's fine.
Okay, our next email comes from Tex, who says, hey guys, love the show. I've been reading comics for about a year now, and I've read quite a few series and graphic novels, my favorites being Preacher, Why the Last Man, Walking Dead, and Fables, and a few superhero books, including Marvel's and The Dark Knight Returns. Now I think I'm ready to properly step up into the world of superheroes. The problem is, I don't know where to start. I like the look of the Marvel Universe more, but is it safe to simply go to a comic book shop and pick up a few books without being completely lost? It just seems like there is so much history and a lot developed for all characters that it's impossible to just jump in. Any advice would be appreciated. Thanks,
Tex. Just jump in.
Just hold your nose and dive right in.
There's a pervasive idea that you can't just start reading comics. We get this.
I did.
Get this email or a variation of this email
daily,
3 times a week at the very least.
Ron, what was your first comic book?
Excalibur number 19.
Oh, 19. So did you go back and read the first 18 right away?
Yeah. No, but my first X-Men comic book was X-Men number 268. And I couldn't afford to go back and read.
Right.
Yeah, I just started reading from there. Yeah.
And that's what anybody does.
Eventually, yeah, you have to just take the leap in and figure out it as you go.
Yeah. And figure out what you like. And, I mean, listen to the show, read the, go to
Wikipedia/comics
and look at those, look at what people are liking and find something you think you might like, but
and then
where
are
you supposed to start? There's nowhere to start with Marvel.
And I still say if you find a character or book you like and you want to know about it, go to your store and be like, hey, what did I miss? Mm-hmm. Or go online, look on Wikipedia. There's a bunch of different websites.
Or go to iFanboy and ask people. They'll tell you.
Go to the forums.
Yeah.
People are very friendly about saying, hey, read this stuff. This is good stuff. But eventually, and not just talking to who's this?
Tex.
I'm talking to all the people who email us every day about this.
Yep.
You got to just jump in somewhere.
Dive right in.
And you got to make a leap, and you got to, and there will be a little bit of work on your part.
Yeah,
that's just the way it's going to be. Everybody did it. Everybody started somewhere.
It's worth it.
I only read number ones.
So our next email, our last email, comes from Smee. Unfortunately, I can't pronounce your real name, so I apologize. Smee says, hey, iFanboy, I've always looked to see how tall superheroes are and how they are drawn depicted by the artist. Batman, Bruce Wayne, is 6'2", and Superman is 6'3", etc. How come there are no short superheroes, not including kids like the Teen Titans? I know Dick Grayson is supposed to be 5'10", and that seems short to me, but he is drawn taller. Most artists make him as tall as other heroes, like Hal Jordan or Green Arrow, who are 6'1". It seems that most artists don't really draw the superheroes to be the exact height they are said in their bios. It really pisses me off when artists draw Batman to look considerably shorter than Superman, even though he's only 1 inch shorter. Also, people drawing Wonder Woman to tower over other heroes. She's only 5'11", and most male superheroes are at least 6 foot. Plus, isn't it time for Tim Drake to have an updated height in the bios? He's 17 right now, and he's still said to be 5'3 or 5'7 in other bios. Let's make the kid at least 5'9". Do you guys ever pay attention to how tall the superheroes are and how tall artists draws them in books? Plus, I've always wondered how tall you guys are. Let me guess and see if my guesses are correct.
Creepier.
Connor is 6'1".
No.
Ron is 5'9".
No.
And Josh is 5'8".
No.
Am I close?
No.
Thanks a lot. 5'9"?
I will say this. The one thing we hear a lot when we go to cons is people meet us and say, wow, you guys are all much taller than I thought you'd be.
Well, because TV makes us look smaller. Because the little.
No, it's because there's always like, Josh is the little one. I'm normal sized.
Josh, Ron and I are just
gargantuan men.
Do you remember that one guy in San Diego who was so shocked how tall we were, he was speechless for about 2 minutes?
I do remember that. That was weird, yeah. Well, Connor, you're 6'3".
I'm 6'3", yeah.
I'm 6 foot.
5'10".
You're 5'10"?
Yeah.
He's the shrimp.
Yeah, you're the shrimp.
I'm completely average size.
We take his lunch money every day.
Give me lunch money.
Yeah,
man, I was 14 and I was 5'10", and I was like, this is going to be fucking sweet. Stop growing entirely.
But I'm drawn to be 6'5", though, so no. No, I'm a 6 foot even. And
wait.
First question, why are there no short superheroes?
There are.
Wolverine.
Well, there are. There's Wolverine and the Atom.
Puck.
Oh, the Atom?
Yeah.
Nice.
Al Pratt.
Puck.
D-Man.
Yeah, but at the same time, because they're superheroes.
They're physical ideals.
I think Spider-Man's like 5'8", right? 5'9"?
But
Connor just went to an aneurysm.
Yeah, he was holding his head the whole time he read the email. Here's the thing. Get over it. Whatever you think the stat sheet says...
It doesn't matter. It's completely irrelevant.
And each artist... I mean, you know, to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, you can't make like 5'4" Batman. But
like Wolverine can't be taller than Captain America. Captain American's the shorter Captain America.
This has actually come up before where somebody said, why don't you have style guides for these characters?
Because an artistic interpretation,
it will hamper that. And I think that if you do that, you'll end up missing out on stuff that all of a sudden changes what everything looks like. A guy like Humberto Ramos, whether you like him or not, he's screwed if he's got to stick to something like that.
Yep.
Because you're trying to...
Ed McGuinness is not going to draw like Michael Lark is not going to draw like Herbert Durant.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Draw,
yeah.
They all draw different sized people.
Yeah.
And so basically what you want to look at is what the art is trying to tell you when they show you those heights. It's not literal. If Superman is towering over Batman, the artist is trying to tell you something.
Right.
It isn't necessarily saying he's 3 inches higher than him. It's trying to tell you one of these characters has a status that's different than the other characters. And, you know, the camera angle or the whatever can make a difference And you kind of have to go with it a little bit. Like, and it's funny because there are those Who's Who DCs and there are those handbooks in the Marvel
Secret
Universe.
Secret files and stuff, yeah.
You know what? If I'm writing a comic book, I'm not necessarily checking everything I do with those because it doesn't
matter. Well, you need to from a story standpoint.
No,
I mean, but
I'm
not
talking
from
a stats standpoint. Right, it's not important, and it's just something that's fun to read at one point. We had a similar discussion about this on the iFanboy forums about age.
Yeah.
Somebody posted, what were the age of all the Bat characters and why didn't it make sense?
Well, it's like, that's
never
like
going to make sense.
The keystone to the ages of the Marvel Universe is Rogue.
Right, but it's never, none of it ever is going to make sense.
Yeah.
And neither will height. It's all different, and it's all whatever serves the story best. And you're,
if you're well, to within taught, reason, though.
Yes.
I'm, you know.
Well, everything is within reason.
Right,
that's
right.
Implied.
Right.
It can't be so extreme that it takes you out of it immediately. But if you're looking at it to such an extent that you're like saying 1 or 2 inches is taking you out of the story or bugging you, then I think you're not paying attention to the right part of it.
Right.
I think. You know, I could be wrong. One of these days, I'll be like,
well,
the suit was blue. Shouldn't have been blue. It should have been
purple. It's supposed to be an obsessive compulsive nightmare.
That's the thing. I mean, like, if you really think about, I mean, back to the age thing, you know, Dick Grayson's age from age 8 to 20s, Batman hasn't really aged.
Right.
You know, that's just how it has to work, or otherwise the comics don't make sense. And the same thing with height. You know, an inch or two here or there.
I can't believe we're talking about the height.
I don't let Robin be 8 in my mind ever, because that's just absurd. Oh, you met an 8-year-old.
He kicked my ass and took my lunch money.
I know. It's well, not when you were 8. But like now, you'd be like, oh, come
no,
on.
No, it was last week.
In my mind, you know, Robin had to be at least 12 or
he was,
something
well,
like that.
I think that's what Tim Drake was when he was 12.
Yeah.
But either way, he still would have aged 10 years.
Sure.
And still would make Batman in his 40s, which wouldn't make any sense. But it's just these things, you can't get bogged down in these details. Otherwise, you won't enjoy the stories. You'll never enjoy the stories.
The really important thing with comics is to read it as you're now.
Yeah.
It's now. It's what now is.
And how do you even judge height in a comic?
It's true.
Yeah, you need like those, you know, like in the convenience
Do
stores.
The ears count?
They've got the
the bat ears.
The bat
count
ears
in the
height? Yeah, maybe.
So basically, you were probably looking for Confederates on that one. You may not have found them.
Sorry.
Batman's 5'5", but the ears make him 6 foot.
And he has heels. He has lifts in his shoes.
So if you have, if you're curious about how much superheroes weigh, or any other details about them, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please bring in other questions like this. We love talking about this stuff. So contact@ifanboy.com.
I hated Kelly Jones Batman, by the way.
I didn't like it.
Oh,
we're not doing any voicemails this week because we talked a lot about the books and things like that. We ran a little long. So Josh, why don't you take us home?
Get over to ifanboy. Thank you. Get over to ifanboy.com.
Oh, why do you lie about your height?
I wear heel lifts.
You wear lifts?
Yeah.
You're
I'm like
5'7".
I'm Rorschach height. I'm actually like 5'9" and like 9/10". Like, I'm not quite.
So you're really 5'9".
Rorschach in the movie was shorter than he was in the book.
I
thought so.
I have high hair. Go to ifanboy.com for the pick of the week review that was written by Ron, this guy over here. I'm pointing at him in case you're at home. And lots of other stuff there. There's great content every single day, weekday. And lots of good discussion, stuff like that. You can go to ifanboy.com/about for your social network links. And while you're there, go to the store, or ifanboy.com/store or /Amazon to buy stuff.
Yes, please help us. And if you want to buy something, you can support iFanboy by becoming an iFanboy member. If you go to ifanboy.com/store, you can see all our different membership types. We've got you can sign up for $4 a month or $42 a year, and that gets you the iFanboy prize pack, which contains some stickers and buttons and a free comic.
From our collection.
Or you can sign up for $10 a month or $100 a year, which gets you the prize pack, plus the special edition limited iFanboy members t-shirt that only premium members do get. And if you go to ifanboy.com/store, you can see we had sold the Herm shirt.
The Herm shirt is sold out.
Check that out if you want the Herm shirt
if
to come back.
If you still want one, go to the site. There's instructions to email us.
Enough to justify an order, but stay tuned to the store because a new shirt is coming.
In the next couple of weeks will be the new shirt.
Yes.
We'll announce on ifanboy.com.
But the awesome thing that we announced last week, and if you go to ifanboy.com, you can check out, is we're doing a giveaway to the iFanboy membership base. We're giving away a page of original art by Mike Allred. From Red Rocket 7. It's from issue number 1, I think it's
page
5.
You know how much it hurts Ron to have to give this page.
You have no idea. Like, it's killing me.
It's actually a Xerox of the one that's in Ron's room. If you want to see it, you can go to fanboy.com. Right there at the top, there's a red post with Mike Allred giveaway, and you can see the page.
Yep.
And if you like it, you're not a member, you want a chance to win it.
You've got to become a member. So the deadline to become a member to be eligible for the Mike Allred original art piece is April 16th. We're going to be announcing the winner on the show that comes out on April 19th. So if you're not a member yet and you want to be and you want this page of original art, you want to be eligible for it, become a member before April 16th. We're going to be doing more giveaways like this, so definitely you can expect it in the future. So become a member now. Don't wait. and we really want to thank everybody who's become a member, but we still need more. You know, $4 a month, $10 a month, that's the price of a comic or two.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that, you know, like, and we're doing everything for iFanboy free. It will always be free. We're never going to charge you for the content, but we do need your support to help keep the lights on. So
if
please,
you were thinking about it at all, this yep. would really help.
Now would be the time. It's tax season. We know it's tough, the economy, but come on, you're buying these comics.
Speaking of tax season, I got a letter from the IRS saying you owe money from 2005.
Oh, that's
like
not a good, that's...
like $100. I was like, come on.
They need every penny.
Right now?
Yeah. They need
right
every
now?
Penny. Yeah.
You mean right now?
Yeah. Well, seriously, in comparison, drop in the bucket.
I know, yeah. But it's just like
I know.
Yeah.
That's I'm a podcaster professionally. IRS. You, in addition to this audio show, every week we do a video show on ifanboy.com and revision3.com/ifanboy. This past week it was the Top Cow show, and this coming week it's a show about costumes. We talk about superhero costumes, our favorites, our least favorites, the goofy ones, the fun ones.
Hypothetically, that's the next episode.
No, is it Josh?
It's going to, listen, it's going to happen.
You
feeling
can
good
out.
About this one.
And actually, it depends on where you are. Sometimes it's Wednesday morning. It's
well, basically Revision 3 changed the way they released the shows, and now they get released overnight between Tuesday and Wednesday.
It comes out about 11 p.m. East Coast time, yeah. Tuesday.
But that's not... It's
we're just going to say Wednesday.
Yeah, look for it on Wednesday
but
mornings.
If you're up late... It might
you
be
could
like
check
Tuesday
it. You
night.
Could check
or
it,
yeah. if you're in like Hawaii, yeah. It'll be like Tuesday afternoon. But,
right.
You know.
That's
true. But it comes out on Wednesday.
For both of you in Hawaii, thank you. That's perfect. If you still want to get one of the blue iFanboy intern t-shirts, you can do that at revision3.com/store. You can go pick one of those up for the low, convenient price of $15.99.
And you can send us an email, contact@ifanboy.com. You can call us 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697. And, you know, when you do that, make it short, leave your name and where you're from.
Get to the point, man.
And if you like us, and the point is to go to iTunes and write a review, because we're so close to 400 reviews, and Around Comics is not.
Yes.
And so I want to remind everybody, iFanboy, Around Comics, iFanboy.
Last week you heard us talking about Around Comics,
yeah.
And the fact is, we don't like them.
No.
We don't like
drunk idiots.
I think it's time that we come clean in
this. We don't
like
their stupid faces.
You know, it's, like it's let's be honest, it's been a friendship of convenience at this point.
It's true.
You know,
true.
I mean, Chris likes to buy the drinks when we go drinking with him.
And
so
that's
I'm
fine.
Not, yeah, that's fine. And please, everybody listen to this, don't tell them.
And when
that's the key. We can't let Around Comics know about this.
I email Tom during the day, and it's really out of spite.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Right.
It's not,
I don't do it because I like Doc Doom. It's out of spite because he's really not.
And I think you could take Sal. I think you could.
I've been with them, and it is not
in a
pleasant...
In a biblical sense?
No.
It wasn't pleasant?
Intimately.
I've been in the same room.
Intimately.
Was it rough? Was it rough
They
trade?
Don't smell good.
No, no. And the thing is, honestly, do you want to listen to a podcast that doesn't smell good?
No.
No, no,
because
not at
the
all.
Thing is...
iFanboy? Smells
great.
Pretty nice.
We're
like roses.
We're delightful.
You smell like lavender
today. Yeah, thank you.
If
I would do that right now.
If you get near their microphones, it's an unholy stink.
Yeah,
this is like... just smegma.
And the one thing about Around Comics that I don't like is that they don't take things too far. Or iFanboy, we do.
Yes, we don't too far.
So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. And thank God I'm not Chris Niesman.
I know. He's the worst of them all.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.